Elon Musk is amazing in so many ways. I would not say that he's somebody to follow in terms of his ability to communicate as a leader.
Welcome back to another episode of The Pursuit of Purpose. My name is Chris Kiefer, and today I have Keith Norris, who is the CEO of Complete XRM. Keith, thank you so much for taking the time to come on today.
You bet, Chris. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So we met through a group called SaaS Academy, and Keith has a number of different softwares that he sells. So Keith, rather than me explaining what you do, give us the short of what Complete XRM is and then the different products that you have in the marketplace right now.
Sure. Complete XRM, we are a software as a service company. We've built four products and operate four products, starting with Plan Plus Online, which we built with Franklin Covey. It's the online version of a Franklin Planner and CRM software. We've got Pocket Informant, which is a calendaring and task management app for iOS and Android that is based on the more or less the David Allen getting things done methodology. And KPI Fire, which is a business process improvement software that is really tied heavily to the Lean Six Sigma methodology. So we work with large enterprises who are quantifying the impact of their improvement programs, so like Lean Six Sigma. And most recently, Stand Up Alice. So Stand Up Alice is a great little app that works with Microsoft Teams and Slack, and it just helps organize daily stand-up meetings, daily huddles. It's a product that we were using for a few years as just users of it. We had an opportunity to buy the product from the developers, and we acquired that, and it's just it's a great little tool.
Well, today we are not going to be talking about software, well, partially about software, but focusing on culture, and specifically culture building, something I think you're pretty passionate about. Give us the, like, where does this passion come from before we get into, like, the way to do it or your recommended way of creating a positive and intentional culture. But what's your background that led you to this, like, interest?
I think the, the origination of this interest in culture, this is something that's probably been evolving for a long period of time. I've been an entrepreneur and running a, you know, company for over 20 years now, well over 20 years. And so it's always been something that was important to me, but I don't think I realized the mechanics of it until probably about 10 years ago. But we were at a point, like a lot of people come to in a business, where things weren't going great. You kind of hit like a rock bottom. You had to kind of figure out what was the most important. And we really, you know, kind of landed on this idea that it matters what you do. You've got to make good strategic choices about your business and what industry you're in. But the how you do things is such an important part of, I guess, what you'd call the satisfaction or the enjoyment or just the quality of life that you get in the business that you were in. And there was a few interactions that I had that really hit home for me. One of them was I was listening to a keynote presentation from a guy who, his name's Cameron Harold. He was the COO at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And he was talking about how this company that picked up trash as their primary, you know, that was their business. They built a great business out of this. And it was talking about how they had such great culture. And for me, it was just this like light bulb moment where it really doesn't matter what you do. You could pick up trash as your business. You know, I wouldn't think that's like a super sexy business or super exciting or super fun. But even in that as an industry, you can make it fun. You can make it enjoyable. You can have a great business. You can have a great company. So for me, that was just this like light bulb moment that it almost doesn't matter what you do. I mean, the better choices you make about what you do, obviously, like, you know, there's a lot to that. But how you do it and the way you build the organization is actually probably going to contribute more to the satisfaction that you get out of life than the industry that you're in.
Mm. Yeah. Cameron Harold wrote the book Double Double, right? Yeah. I read that. I completely agree. The, how do you, obviously everyone says like, oh, I want a good culture. Or like, I'd rather work somewhere that has a good culture. I'm sure that people could argue about like which, you know, what's the definition of a good culture, but what would you say are like some key, I want to say buzzwords, what's the word I'm looking for? Characteristics of a good culture. So first, like, let's define what it is we're talking about that's good, and then how do you actually do that or make that?
Yeah, and that's this is the path that I started on probably about 10 years ago, and it was this question that you just asked me that I went deep down the rabbit hole. So I started just really immersing myself in what is culture, what is good culture, and I can synthesize this idea of culture, and I'll go into that here as we talk, but basically into three main areas, and I can simplify it by saying culture is the way we do things around here. It encompasses really everything that we think, like the values and the beliefs and just the sense of what's possible and what's okay and what we think as a group of people, the way we communicate with each other, and the behavior pattern. So I'll just start with those three areas. Think, say, do. That's like a kind of a simple way of taking this idea of culture and taking it from something that's mystical and magical, because culture, everybody loves to talk about culture. Everybody loves to, you know, everybody wants good culture. I don't think anybody starts a company thinking, oh, we're going to have terrible culture. But it's one of those things that if you don't focus on, if you don't intentionally build a culture by design, what you end up with is a culture by default. And a lot of times it's that culture by default that isn't great. So there's an exercise that you can do with a group of people, especially if you're trying to figure out where you're at, because culture's it's always local, meaning that a team, a manager, a location, a site, an individual location of your business could have a little different culture than, let's say, the corporate offices. So culture is very local, tends to be driven by the people that you're closest to. The best organizations can build a culture that scales. One question that I like to ask in this culture discovery process is asking a group of people to write down one word to say, my ideal workplace is, and then, you know, come up with a word. And I would describe those as values. So the words that you come up with, like somebody might say supportive. Somebody might come up with performance driven because I want to make money. Somebody else might say caring because I want to feel like a team. You know, so all of these words that somebody can fill in, I would describe those as values. And the essence of culture, one of the places to start with this idea of culture is what I would refer to as shared values. So the values are basically, you can think of them as just these words that people come up with values. It might be performance, it might be success, it might be caring, it might be respect, it might be integrity, it might be fun. You know, there's so many different words that you can come up with. And what I've found is, as individuals, we all have a certain set of core values that we care about as individuals. And there's certainly some themes and some general areas. For some people, maybe, you know, fitness is more important. Maybe some people really, you know, care about travel and adventure. I mean, some people really care about family. You know, people are going to have a different set of individual core values. When you're defining the culture that you want to have at the company, the values that you want to have are a good place to start. So if you've already got a company, it's one thing to say, hey, this is what our values are, and you know, that's what they're going to be. It's another thing if you're already have an existing organization to gather the people around and ask this question. I would call it a values discovery workshop. So you find out what the values that the group has, and you put those down in words, you start to give a little definition, a little meaning to those. And then eventually I would describe those as the shared values of the group. And a couple of key ideas is that particularly in building a company or an organization, it's not critical that every one of my personal core values is a value of the company, But it is important that I've got enough overlap with my personal values and the company values that I can feel like this is a place that I can belong and that I can succeed and that I can, you know, contribute to the culture. So the when I describe this idea of how do we think, what do we think is important, I'll use the concept of shared values. And shared values could be words that just communicate meaning. So for example, teamwork, what does it mean to be a team? This would be something that you reinforce as part of the structure that you do with your organization. Goals, I would describe goals as a good example of a shared value. A goal, in as much as the team that you're coming up with that goal with are all bought into that goal as something that's important. A goal in itself is a version of a shared value.
So tools, resources, tactics to make it easier to implement this think, say, do idea?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think so I'll share with you a few of like the tools or the tactics or things that you can do. The concept of what is culture? Culture is the way we think together, the way what we think is okay, what we think is important. So when you think about your company goals, of course, it makes sense to say like, we need to set some goals that everybody buys into. So we get everybody thinking that this is, moving us in the right direction. The second building block here that I refer to is I summarize it by saying it's everything that we say, or it's what we say. I'll expand on that by saying it's the communication that we use, the way we communicate with each other. Of course, you know, you and I were speaking in English. If I was speaking French and you were speaking, you know, English, we'd have a harder time communicating. It's interesting to me, and this is maybe a little bit of my background in software and coding and that kind of thing, but if you have a period or a comma or one letter wrong in a word, it doesn't work in your software code, right? It breaks. A lot of times in communication, we assume a lot of understanding with the people that we're meeting with. This happens so much in companies too. The words that are used are general approximations as opposed to things with very specific definitions. So when we do an employee onboarding, we have this little culture deck that we present, and we talk through what culture means inside of our organization. And part of that, I would describe this as like a vocabulary lesson, right? Every industry has certain vocabulary that you might use acronyms. I had an instance one time, somebody that had been in my company for like 6 months. One of our products is called PlanPlus Online. We use the acronym PPOL. Well, this particular person didn't work on that product. He worked on our product that we called PI, which was Pocket Informant. He'd been with our company for like 6 months, and somebody in a meeting said something about PPOL, and he was like, hey, I know that I should know this already, but what does PPOL mean? And it was just like this moment where we're like, how do you not know that? Like, you've been here for so long. And it was a good lesson for me in this idea that particularly in industries, there's this jargon that happens, and you can't take for granted that everybody understands the jargon inside of your industry. So if you were looking for like, how can I take this and adapt this to my company? I would say, do you have a vocabulary document that you could onboard a new person to your organization and teach them literally some of the words and some of the language that has specific meaning? On this idea of,
I think it was Elon Musk that said, I heard this was several years ago, he basically banned, I think it was at SpaceX, the use of acronyms. He was like, you're not allowed to do it anymore, because there's so many. And it's like, nobody knows what they mean. And it's just like an opportunity to like alienate people that are, no one wants to ask. So he's just like, no acronyms. I don't know if they still do that, but I remember reading that that might have just been a tweet where he was frustrated, or if it was actually a policy that they enforced. But I was like, that's interesting.
Elon Musk is amazing in so many ways. I would not say that he's somebody to follow in terms of his ability to communicate as a leader. And I'll give you an example.
Except on Twitter.
Well, especially on Twitter. There's a concept around this idea of communication that I'm very fond of, and it's this. It's you're responsible for what you communicate, not only what you say. You're responsible for what you communicate, not only what you say. So if in the study and in the science of communication, there's some various different models, but one of the things that a lot of people have seen cited or in presentations is this idea that communication is more than just the words that are used. It's the tone, it's the visual cues, it's the facial expressions, it's the tone. And in our organization, and again, because I'm one of the leaders in the organization, I get to kind of like make the rules, you might say, but I'm just one person inside the organization. So if other people don't play along, then the culture is different. So when it starts with me, I'll say, you're responsible for what you communicate, not only what you say. The idea there is that a lot of times with communication, people get, there's a great quote by George Bernard Shaw that says the biggest problem with communication is the belief that it's happened.
I've heard that. Yep.
You know what I mean? Like hasn't actually, like, you think you've communicated something, but the message that you sent is not the message that was received. So there's a fabulous book, and it's called Leadership Through People Skills, and talks about this 2x2 matrix model of communication. And the premise is this: there's one best way to communicate, particularly as a leader, and that is what they describe as assertive and respectful communication. So it's, you think of a 2x2 matrix where you've got assertive on the top and passive on the bottom, and you think of respect on one side and disrespect on the other. And if you're familiar with the TV show The Office, The Office is a great example of dysfunctional communication in terms of this model. You've got like the Dwight Schrute, who is very assertive, but very disrespectful, right? Very disrespectful. You've got the Michael, who's very passive. You know, he's always avoiding the hard issues, but just trying to make everybody happy, you know, just kind of Mr. Friendly. And then you have the passive disrespect, which I would describe as like, you know, maybe Jim, where he's, you know, putting your stapler in the Jello as a way of telling you he doesn't like your policy or something. I don't know that there's anybody in that show that is a good example of assertive and respectful communication. So this model of assertive and respectful communication is one that I'm super fond of, and you know, talk a lot about. We use this idea of assertive respect as a standard for communication. And coming back to this Elon Musk thing, I'll say that sarcasm doesn't work in the written word. You know, if you've seen it's so easy to misinterpret an email or a written message. And Elon Musk is notorious for this. You never know when Elon Musk writes something on Twitter what he really means. There's a high probability that he usually has some sarcastic tone, but really what he's trying to do is oftentimes just have a little chuckle to himself that this thing that he said could be misinterpreted, right? So I will often cite that sarcasm is great for comedy or great for innuendo, but it's not great for leadership communication, right? You want to be clear in your communication. And the standard for that is what I would describe as assertive and respectful communication. There's being respectful in a situation does not necessarily solve every problem, but being disrespectful in a situation will make any challenge that you're facing automatically worse. If you look at And again, this idea of culture, it applies to the companies that we're building. It applies to our country right now with political issues that we're having. You know, one of the biggest problems that we have, and I'll use this term, creating a culture of productivity where things are moving forward. One of the reasons why things aren't moving forward in our companies or in our country is that we don't have a common belief about what is important, right? Some people think this is important. Some people think that is important. Because we can't get a common buy-in on what the shared values are, what we all want to accomplish, then the communication erodes into basically disrespect. You know, people who can't see eye to eye, people who don't respect each other as human beings, people who can't, you know, as Stephen Covey would say, seek first to understand. You know, there's a certain amount of respect in the idea of listening to somebody else's point. So again, this communication pillar of culture it's really the essence of how things get done, and how you bridge what you think is important to the third pillar, which I describe as do. And in a culture perspective, I oftentimes describe culture as like this iceberg, where if you think about the analogy of an iceberg, where the majority of the iceberg is actually under the water, the part of the culture that is observable is really just like the behaviors that you see done inside of an organization. But so much of the culture is actually the thoughts and beliefs that people bring to the organization. You know, those personal values, those shared values. So much of what's happening in culture is under the water, you might say. So the third building block of culture, I describe it as do, or the behavior patterns. And this is really, when it comes to creating culture, obviously you can't control the way people think. You can't look at somebody and say, I know what Chris is thinking right now. I mean, sometimes when you have a really good connection with someone, you might actually feel that way. But a stranger off the street, maybe somebody that's coming in for an interview, it's really hard to know what somebody is actually thinking, right? Like you can't control what somebody's thinking. The communication, communication is a tricky one, because there are so many ways for dysfunctional communication to creep in. And I'll just give you one example. Passive aggressive communication is one that a lot of people struggle with, especially leaders, right? Let's say, I don't know, maybe somebody's having an issue with customer service, and the customer service rep is being kind of snotty, and they say, oh, so you're saying we should do everything that the customers want us to do?
Yeah.
And how, as a leader, do you say, well, no, I'm not saying that I don't want you to do everything that the customers want us to do, but what I'm saying is the way that you said that, you know, communicates something different than what you said. So I come back to this idea of you're responsible for what you communicate, not only what you say. I could say, oh yeah, Chris is a real rock star. We should totally keep Chris around forever. You know what I mean? Like, there's ways that you can say things that are completely disrespectful to somebody else on the team. And so as a leader, you're like, how do I tell this person that they can't say that? Well, so you're trying to put a rule that I can't tell Chris that he's a rock star? Like, it's so tricky. So if you take the bar, and it's not about what you can or can't say, it's about what you are communicating. And the bar is, we should communicate respect with each other internally and with our customers. And, you know, the assertive side of that is we should be assertive. You know, we shouldn't brush things under the rug that need to be dealt with. You know, sometimes when I have this conversation about assertive respect, people will say, so this just means that we're supposed to be nice to everybody? And I would say, no, respect and being nice to somebody are not the same thing. I mean, they're maybe similar in nature, but you can terminate someone and hold someone accountable for poor performance in a respectful way, in a very respectful way. You know, it's really popular in a lot of areas. I mean, Elon Musk is probably one of these guys to, you know, to bring him up as an example. He's one of these guys that's like known for super high performance. I would also say he's also known for being very disrespectful to a lot of people. And my opinion is that that's not the kind of culture I want to have inside my organization. I love high performers. High performers are fabulous, but I would hold people to a standard of communicating respect. So it's not one or the other. In my world, it's you got to have both. You've got to be a respectful person. You've got to be, I mean, there's so many ways to communicate and to share that respect. And what I find is it just makes people a lot more caring in general of like their other human beings. It makes them a lot more aware of the way that they're doing something, how it might affect somebody else inside the organization. You know, it's just, so it's one of those foundational, I would call it a value, respect, that for me and my organizations and the ones, the communities and the companies that I have that I can contribute something to the culture of, it's one of those core values that I bring to the table to try to share with the organizations that I'm a part of.
So then you have this, culture builder framework. Is that the think, say, do, or is there a different framework? And now a quick word from our sponsor, which is Boolean Review. Boolean is a review software that my wife and I own, and we sell this software to home service businesses. So I know there are many different people that listen to this podcast, but if you know someone, an electrician, an HVAC business, a painting company, maybe a coffee stand, someone that is providing service to customers and get found online by customers, we would love to talk to them. This is a review software that is the highest converting review software in the home service space in particular. And if you're wondering what that means, if you have 100 clients in your business, the typical business gets between 1 to 2% of those customers. So for every 100, they would get one person or two people to leave them a review on Google. Other review softwares get between 3 and 5%, and the Boolean review software gets 20% of your customers to leave you Google reviews. And these are fantastic Google reviews with lots of words, keywords that are going to help with SEO, pictures, stories, the names of your employees. So if you want to learn more, check out BooleanReview.com. And now back to the episode.
Yeah, the culture builder framework is basically those three pillars, the think, the say, and the do. And the do is really, when you get into the do, it's all about what I would call behavior patterns. And in behavior patterns, there's two concepts that I would probably just propose or start with. And if you're trying to define culture, again, this idea of, you know, values discovery, and do we have mission, vision, values, shared goals, that stuff is, you know, is an important part of it. The way we communicate with each other, the idea of you're responsible for what you communicate, not just what you say, and this assertive, respectful framework with, and then the behavior patterns. And this is where a lot of people get into things like, let's just say like manuals or standard operating procedures. Like, this is the way we do things around here. Here's the process. There's the terms that I like to use specifically are habits. So if big company or small company, if you got a group of your company together and say, hey, who are the people here that we like what they do? You know, who are the people that we like working with inside the company? And, you know, maybe oppose that to some of the behaviors that we don't like as much. And what you'll find in that conversation is that you'll start to uncover what I would describe as habits. Oh, I really like Melissa because Melissa shows up early and she's always well prepared for a meeting, right? I really like working with Megan because she's always great at organizing a project plan. You know what I mean? Like, you when you ask that question of what do we like and what behaviors do we like, what behaviors do we not like, you start to get at things that I would refer to as habits. You know, we had a brief little discussion about books. One of the great books is called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. It talks about the habit loop. And that was, for me, it was one of the first times I was introduced to this concept that habits, they have a trigger, they have the behavior, and then they have a reward. And when you think about all of the habits that you or anybody else has, there's a trigger and there's a reward. The behavior is this thing that happens in between the trigger and the reward. So when you think about your organization and you say, well, what are the behaviors that we want more of? And what are the behaviors that we want less of? And how can we identify those habits in and start to get some leverage on them? I think of the you know, if you've seen like the Tootsie Roll candy that has the little, you know, the piece of chocolate with the wrapper and it's twisted on each of the ends. There's only so much that you can control in defining culture inside of the organization. So much of it is just like people interacting with people. You can't control that much of it. But if you think about this idea of the habit loop and the trigger and the reward, you start to get this sense of there's a few places where we can actually get some control on this thing. So is there, and this is where it starts to get into more sophisticated like process management. There's a tool called the SIPOC. It stands for suppliers, inputs, process, outputs, and customers. And it's a way of breaking down any process that you might have and saying, okay, what are the suppliers to this process? If I run a hot dog stand, in order for me to deliver my service, which is making the hot dog, I have to get certain inputs. I've got to get a hot dog and I got to get a bun. And I've got to get those from someone, a supplier. So I've got a supplier, I've got my inputs, and then I have this messy thing in the middle called the process. And then I have an output, which is usually a deliver, maybe it's a cooked hot dog. And then I have a customer or a consumer. So the idea of this SIPOC, if you take this inside of your organization, every company, every product, every service has value streams, streams through which they deliver value in their organization. And you can break these processes down across, usually they show up as like departments or functions inside of your business. Maybe you have the sales organization, you have the product organization, you have the billing organization, you might even have the hiring process. So every one of these is a process. Every process that you have has some sort of supplier of the inputs that are needed for that process to take place. It has some sort of an output or deliverable, and it has somebody that consumes that. So this little model referred to as the SIPOC is a great framework that you can use in defining your culture so that you can actually identify what those key behavior patterns are that you want to have repeated. Because essentially culture is really the repetition of certain events. Like, you know, in some Spanish cultures, there's a repetition of an event when a girl turns 15 years old, quinceanera, right? If you think of culture more broadly, not just like company culture, but you think about some of these events that are, I would refer to them as rituals, something of cultural significance inside of the organization. So if you are a leader and you're coming back to this idea of what can I actually do to influence the culture, I start to land on these rituals of significance, these reoccurring patterns of activities that have significance. And as a leader, if you have this think, say, do kind of mantra as you approach things, you can apply this to different problems that you might be having. Let's say Johnny and Sally are having some issue or some problem about the way some new order was handed off between sales and production. And you take this lens of think, say, do, and you apply it to this problem. And you say, all right, Johnny and Sally, look, I think we both have the same goal in mind, right? We want this customer to be happy with our process. Can we start there? Yes, we have a shared goal or a shared value in mind. We want this customer to be happy. Okay, so if we both have the same outcome in mind, we've got the shared value. Let's look at the way we communicated what we were trying to do here. Was there something about the way, you know, Sally said something to Johnny that either communicated disrespect or made it feel like, you know, maybe this department wasn't useful? And if no, the communication was just fine. Everybody was very respectful to each other. Well, okay, now let's talk about the behavior pattern. Was there something about the way that this input was supposed to go from process one to process two that was missed? So it kind of takes all of these problems that you're having, and it gives you a little bit of a framework to solve things that sometimes people might point to and say, I don't know if you've heard the analogy, like focus on the process, not the person, attack the process, not the person. I think that's probably a good example of how having a belief that there's a framework that you can use to address culture can lead you to constructive solutions to solving some of these problems.
So you mentioned The Power of Habit. What are two other books, or I don't know if that's one of your official recommendations, because I always ask three recommendations for each guest. Is that one of your three, or do you have three other ones for me?
That's a fabulous book. One of them that I would recommend, I'm a huge fan of Seven Habits by Stephen Covey. It's always a great one. Another one that I'm a big fan of is Execution by Ram Charan and Larry Bossidy. That's a really I think it's interesting. And Power of Habit. Power of Habit is a fantastic book. Absolutely.
What was the second one you said again?
It's called Execution. Ram Charan and Larry Bossidy.
Interesting.
And it's a book about, I forget the company. It was maybe Honeywell or GE or something. It's over 10 years old now, the book for sure. But, as I talk about the do and the behavior patterns and the process, I'm a big fan of what I call the five frequencies. So if you can establish these five frequencies, frequency number one is the annual planning cycle. So you should have some ritual that you do on an annual basis with your organization that specifically focuses on the mission, vision, values, culture, and the 1 year plus type plan. Second frequency is quarterly. So, I think about this a lot like the seasons of the year and kind of the connection between the natural and, these five frequencies. So just like the seasons change quarterly, you should revisit your strategic plans on a quarterly basis and review those, make sure people still see the big picture, that they still have the goals on a quarterly basis. The third frequency is what I would refer to as monthly. So, it's pretty common in businesses to close your books monthly. The bank sends you credit cards, a statement monthly, credit card bills you monthly. So the monthly cadence from a financial perspective is one that's a really solid cadence and a ritual that you can build around. The next one is weekly. Most functions in my organizations, the size that a lot of them are at, can operate very efficiently with a weekly cadence of checking in on key metrics and projects. And so we use this weekly, we call them an INU meeting, for important, not urgent. And the reason for that is we want to try to eliminate the constant interruptions of people, especially with being a lot of remote, like if you're just constantly getting peppered with like questions all day long. So we put these weekly meetings in place. We call it important, not urgent. So the stuff that doesn't have to be addressed right now, we put it on the agenda for that meeting. We pick that up once a week. And then the fifth frequency is the daily stand-up. And this is actually where the Stand Up Alice product kind of ties into our message. We have a little tool that helps facilitate this daily huddle. It just asks, what are you working on today? Or what did you do yesterday? What are you doing today? And do you have any blockers? And so it just helps facilitate this daily cadence of a little bit of an interaction back and forth. And so that's basically the science of the interactions that we've structured.
And this is what's described in the Execution book?
The Execution book is, it picks up on some of the stuff around strategic planning and probably like the quarterly and the annual cycles. It's written from the perspective of a large enterprise and like you know, like a large multinational enterprise and some of their planning cycles. So it kind of focuses more on like the quarterly and the annual strategic plan.
And then what is your favorite movie?
My favorite movie.
Or movie recommendation, doesn't have to be your favorite.
Yeah, my favorite movie, I've had this one on my list of favorites for a long time. It's pretty old and it's called Raising Arizona with Nicolas Cage.
Interesting. I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, it's one of Nicolas Cage's first movies. It's a pretty old one. It's just a comedy about a couple that's trying to have a baby and they steal a baby from a couple that had quintuplets, five, you know, kind of thinking like, hey, they had five, they've got more than they need. And it's just a really funny
that's hilarious
comedy that, yeah, it's pretty silly, but funny.
Oh, the Coen brothers. Okay.
There you go. Yep.
Awesome. Okay. And then, what is your preferred method of contact?
LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn, Keith C. Norris.
Keith C. Norris. Well, Keith, thank you so much for taking the time today and sharing your insights on culture. And it was great getting to meet you at SAS. I'm sure we'll be seeing you around at the next one.
You bet. You bet. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you so much for listening. My name is Chris Kiefer, and my mission is to champion the relentless pursuit of purpose. And what that means to me is to be an example, a champion, someone that is in the trenches working and showing and winning and trying and failing in how to pursue a deeper and more meaningful life with the people that I love, with my kids, with my friends, with our family, and also just be a champion and example of entrepreneurship and following my passion and doing what I believe I'm called to on this earth. And so if that inspires you in some way, please share this episode. If you want, like, subscribe, share, whatever, do all the stuff. It means the world to me to get this message and get these guests that I have out there. And if you're interested in any of the book recommendations or looking up other episodes, the movie list, you can visit my website, chriskiefer.com, for all the details on the show. And also check out the Boolean Review software, as well as the Boolean Automation consulting company that I own for home service businesses. So thank you so much, and we'll see you on the next episode.